thought you knew, but you have no.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. What's going on, fellas?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man.
Nothing much with me, man.
I'm good, man. Ray, what's going on with you?
It's always 100% over here. I mean, I'd be right 100% of the time, but I'm feeling like I'm on that 100. I'm going to keep it a buck today.
Yo,
so good luck. I'm about to get at you.
Wow. Like,
you better be ready.
My man motivated, dude. You motivated. All right, I feel you, bro.
Motivated, Kaz.
Okay, Kaz. You got it, Kaz. Hey, man, RIP Vincent Jackson. I heard the news. I was like, dang, bro. That was like a fantasy football legend.
Yeah, I was taken back by that one. That was real sudden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my condolences to his family and his friends and loved ones. That one took me. It really took me by surprise. I was shocked. Just goes to show you, man, life is short.
Yeah, at the age of 38, so short, man. For real, so short.
Yeah, the circumstances is what concerns me because, according to what I read, no signs of foul play, and he's at a hotel when, of course, he has a wife and children. So that says to me, I should say, that could be possible brain damage or he just wasn't making good decisions. Now, we don't know enough yet, but I'm just saying, I get concerned about ex-athletes, especially boxers and football players, because of the potential head trauma they experienced over the course of their career. So I'm hoping that's not the case, but it looks like it might be. But we'll see. I mean, nonetheless, he lost his life, and, you know, condolences to his family. Real talk when I say that. Like I said, keep it 100, because I'm not the thoughts and prayers guy, because that's not real. Mm-hmm. But it's unfortunate. So.
No, it is. I was like you when you hear that in a hotel room, you're like it's like you get kind of concerned about what happened, you know, mentally, you know what I'm saying? Like, he played football. You don't know if CTE played a part of it. You just don't know. Like, you don't know what happened in that situation. So, I mean, they're still doing an investigation. We don't know what happened, but I'm like you. When I heard the news, I was like, I hope it wasn't a football brain injury like CTE that caused that. You know what I mean? So
sure,
you know
sure.
What I'm saying? So it is what it is. But like everybody, prayers to him, to his family, and you know, family and friends. Because again, like I don't know the individual, but he's loved by many. I'm sure of that. Make sure you check us out on sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sport content, especially for your DMV sports teams. Also subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. And you can also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Let's get into the good old tradition. The pregame.
I love it. Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Washington football team signing Taylor Heinicke to a two-year deal at 820. We'll talk about the Washington Wizards defeating John Wall and the Houston Rockets 131-119. Finally, as part of our DMV Baller series, we'll air our interview with DMV Hooper out of Montrose Christian, Tyler Hubbard. But first, Taylor. The Washington football team quarterback Taylor Heinicke re-signs with the team. He signed a two-year deal worth $8.75 million. What were your thoughts on the initial deal? I'll start with you, Ray.
Again, I said this, like, he deserved a shot. Regardless of how many games he played, I kind of make fun of him often. Like, all you need is one game. The Nas remix, all you need is one game. But at the same time, I felt as though that performance against the eventual Super Bowl champion earned him an opportunity to compete for the starting job. So kudos to him. Also, he got a good amount of guaranteed money in that deal, which is awesome for him because, you know, NFL contracts are the wackest out of all professional sports.
Yeah.
So shout out to Taylor Heinicke. We'll see how he does. And I guess I'll save my analysis as to what I expect from him on your next question.
I see, man.
I think, first of all, congratulations to him. He, as Ray stated, he deserves the opportunity to at least have a chance to try out and potentially make this roster and potentially become the starter. Having said all of the nice things, NFL teams let you know what they think of a player by the contract they sign that player to. The money that the Washington football team gave to Taylor Heinicke lets me know that they don't think this guy is a starter. Mm-hmm. They don't think he's a long-term answer. They think he's a guy that could potentially compete and be fill the gap until they find their potential, until Ron Rivera finds his quarterback of the future.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both. I feel like in the situation, I mean, one, like we all, like you two have stated, congratulations to Taylor Heinicke for getting this opportunity. It was promised to him by Coach Rivera that he'll compete for the job. But because of the contract, like Will said, and what he was given, I mean, it's 2 years for $8.75 million. And in today's NFL, where you overpay every quarterback in the book, I mean, that contract for what he did against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and even in Ray has stated before, in a limited body of work, still we've seen quarterbacks being able to kind of still foster a nice chunk of money, even a short term work. So to Will's point, let you know about what this Washington football team thinks of him as becoming a possible starter. He's getting the opportunity. He'll get the opportunity to compete for the job if Coach Ron Rivera is keeping it 100. But to me, this deal states that they're still looking for a quarterback. I mean, that doesn't change my mind. A starting quarterback doesn't change my mind at all.
Yeah, I don't think that this guy's the long-term answer. He's a bridge. Depending on what the organization decides to do with Alex Smith, I think that they do feel comfortable having him compete potentially with Kyle Allen to start next year.
Kyle Allen?
Yeah, I got Kyle Allen done, bro. But go ahead.
What are you talking about, Will? Will, where you been, bro?
Now, he could be. Will, to a point. I mean, it's an opportunity. He could come back, but I just don't – I don't see it. No, folks have been talking Kyle Allen.
I mean, look. Alex Smith came back.
Well, it's not out the realm of possibility, but I feel as though Washington definitely is going to sign a free agent quarterback. We just don't know which one at this point. And based on all the moves they've made to this point and based on the history of Ron Rivera and those making decisions, they're probably not going to spend a lot. So we're going to be looking at the possibility of a guy like Marcus Mariota. I would even go as far as Jacoby Brissett, possibly here in Washington. We'll see. But he's going to compete. We know that. What's dope about Taylor Heinicke is, and I will admit, I never watched the Old Dominion college football game. Old Dominion basketball, both men's and women's, yes, definitely. But who watches the Old Dominion college football? So I can't sit here and act as though I really watched him. But based on what I've read in terms of his scouting report, one thing that Taylor Heinicke does well is read defenses. Mm-hmm. And not Griffin, not Cousins, and certainly not Dwayne Haskins' red defense. So if you have a quarterback that brings that skill set, that would be a nice change here in Washington. Alex Smith, obviously, he was a former number overall pick, has been successful in every stop of his career. But in terms of a young quarterback, that's something that we haven't seen around here. So that'll be dope. Also, he has ability to extend plays. My concern about him is his height. 6'1", not many guys of that height succeed outside of course, the Breezes and the Russell Wilsons of the world. Mm-hmm. And going back to our childhood, Doug Flutie, baby. But this dude is hungry. And that's something that you cannot necessarily compete against if you're just a talented guy who feels as though you're entitled. So I'm expecting him to work hard. And depending on injuries, COVID, you never know what may happen. He'll get an opportunity on his football team.
I think if he gets an opportunity, again, if he is the starter on his football team, it's all predicated on – what do you bring around him? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want him to be successful, you got to make it easy for him to be successful. Meaning that you got to have a strong running game, whatever that, however you constitute that, or if you keep the same guys from last season, or you change the game plan, you bring somebody in, you got to have a strong running game. You got to bring another wide receiver to help him out, because at the end of the day, we can, you know, like we've mentioned this before in prior shows, that the league is smart. So, you know what I mean? They're going to take whatever you do best and take it away from you. So now is your job as an organization, is your job as a coaching staff to make it easy for the quarterback so he doesn't have to overthink certain things. Because we all know talent runs this league, and you give this dude a bunch of talent, then it's going to be easier for him to adjust to whatever defenses do.
So I got a question for you guys. Is this a make or break year for Scott Turner, or you think that that's like Ron Rivera's day one?
That's day one, bro. He owes it to North, bro. That's a nepotism move. I mean, not to be mean about it, but it is what it is. Like, as you're, you know, you're comfortable around people that you know or you know of, you know what I'm saying? And Norv did a lot for Ron Rivera when he was coming up in the game as a coach, you know what I'm saying? So he's going to do the same thing for Scott Turner. I don't see him having a short leash for Scott Turner at all. Will, you think
he'll
have a short
leash? Can you be loyal to a fault?
You can. You definitely can. Will, you think he's down with Scott Turner like that? You think Scott Turner is an individual that he would get rid of, you know, at the quickest sign of a struggling offense?
I know. I was asking you. I don't think so, but I'm thinking that he could make the mistake that Pete Carroll made with Brad Schottenheimer.
I agree. I think he will.
Yeah.
What do you think, Will?
No, I've lost my train of thought. I think that he'll give him opportunity to grow as an offensive coordinator, but I do believe that if Ron Rivera feels that from an offensive standpoint, he has the pieces necessary for his offense to be an explosive, or to be an offense in his vision and his mind that he believes they can be, and they aren't reaching their potential, I do think that he will get rid of Scott Turner. I'm not going to say he's going to get rid of Scott Turner this year. This would only be his second year as offensive coordinator. But I do think if Scott Turner doesn't come in and run the style of offense that Ron Rivera is comfortable with, I do think that you would see a change
down
the line.
It's possible, definitely possible. So let's go back to Heineke. If he is the starting quarterback, Ray, is it a good look or a bad look? And tell me why.
I think it's a good look because you're a new coach, a new regime. You're getting a fresh start. You're not going after a big name, somebody that you have started to develop, somebody who you've seen glimpses of that can have success in this league against the top teams. And again, he competed at a high level against the Super Bowl champions. So I think it's a good look for Ron Rivera. And I also think it's a good look for the running game when you have a mobile quarterback. So I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with it. But I'm thinking that NFL defense, as you said earlier, will study the brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be more challenging, but that's where he'll have to grow. And that's where the coaching staff comes in. That's where Scott Turner comes in. So I think overall it's a good look. Just your offensive coordinator is the one that's in question for me.
Mm-hmm. Will T, think it's a good look or bad look?
I want to go with I don't know.
Okay.
Look, Taylor Heineke, he played one game. He played decently against the eventual Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that great defense. But as Ray made this point, you know, NFL defenses and NFL defensive staffs, they do tend to make adjustments.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. as you get more tape on Taylor Heineke, mm-hmm. you know, does he progress as a passer? Is he able to make the reads? Is he able to make those throws in the tight windows? Is he able to push the ball down the field accurately? You know, those are things you want to see, and I just don't believe we've seen enough of him on the field to know these things. Mm. Obviously, the coaching staff feels comfortable with him from what they've seen from him in practice. But for me, as someone who's not at practice, I just don't know.
I posted the same questions on our social media platforms. This was posted on our Urban Sports Team Twitter and Urban Sports Team Facebook page. And on Twitter at Spinoff Beats tweeted, "We are likely going into the season with Heineke, Allen, and Montez." That's the rookie from last season from Colorado and a draft pick. "I would not expect the draft pick to start immediately. So Heineke is the current favorite, whether people like it or not." I don't think Heineke's starting, but I don't think they're gonna go that route. But you know, I think go ahead.
So here's the thing. You know, I think one thing that we haven't addressed, and maybe you guys addressed it when I wasn't, you know, when I took my hiatus
mm-hmm.
from the show, but Washington offered their first round pick for
Matthew Stafford, yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's another opportunity for them to get a starter who they believe is the upper echelon or top half of the league starter, this team has shown that they will offer that first round pick if the team is willing to accept that as capital for that, for said player.
Yeah.
That's something we haven't addressed. So there's the opportunity for them to acquire a quarterback via trade, you know, whether it's just their first round pick or if it's the first round pick and additional compensation.
No, it definitely.
So I wouldn't get too comfortable necessarily with the. I wouldn't fall in love with the thought of Taylor Heineke being your starting quarterback.
No, I agree. Just I think saying. I agree. We discussed it before too. We have discussed it, and we talked about how this team has been searching to find their quarterback, and they're willing to draft. They're willing to trade their first round pick. So I'll let you know, to be honest with you, if a guy is available that they do want. They're willing to make offers for it. You know what I'm saying? So that's why the contract, the Taylor Heineke contract of $8 million for 2 years, or $8.75 million for 2 years, lets you know to me that, all right, they're just banking to keep him just in case. But we're talking about probability on the gambling side. But like the chances are quite low for this dude to become the starting quarterback, in my opinion. But again, he's a guy that has worked hard enough to get an opportunity to compete if the chips fall where they may, and you bring in guys for him to compete against. But I totally believe that this team is going to get their quarterback in a trade or in free agency. That's just my opinion. On Twitter, JB Raj tweeted, if you exhaust all other options and the price isn't right, then I stick with him over Fitzpatrick. Taylor's of the league, and quite frankly, Alex Smith too. He should not be named anything now, though. They need to try for better. That's what he tweeted. I agree that the same thing Will pretty much said, that like you're looking for something better. You can trade your first round pick, trade for a first round pick if they're going to go that route, or find a free agent quarterback that has been established, or a guy that this coaching staff offensively is comfortable for the quarterback to lead them to some kind of success, whatever that may be, whatever they want to measure success to as. They got to find a quarterback that they're confident that can lead them to either whatever their goal is to be. Anything else before I go to break, fellas?
That's the key. Whatever the goal is to be. And what is that? That's the question. Are they competing for a playoff spot only? Are they thinking championship next season? Are they thinking just about the division? That is yet to be seen. But based on what Coach Rivera did, he pivoted this year and he went for it and they made the playoffs. So I'm thinking the expectations will be raised next year. But as Will and I have stated in past shows, sustained success is important.
Sustained success.
I don't think that equals championship aspirations just yet. Yeah. Although, of course, every goal is to win a Super Bowl. Every team's goal is to win a Super Bowl each season.
Yeah, definitely.
Good.
kind of, sort of. All right, John Wall came back to D.C., but Bradley Beal gave him an L. We'll talk about the Washington Wizards defeating the Houston Rockets last night after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this out for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me. And when it's me drop, I know they gon' lean. World debut, I know they gon' fiend. Everything Mississippi to the Palm Springs. Girls from brunettes down to blonde queens. These young boys don't know what a don mean. I'm just a bad boy gone clean. I'm the diamond chain choker, always remain sober. Don't drink liquor and all the game's over. Need a plane, I explain it to my broker. Three bots in the hood, top down, and ain't over. You know there's more, man, where that come from. Me and Kuda love rolling back to back in one.
See, the names have all changed since I've been around. But the game ain't the same since I left out.
Welcome back, John Wall. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, myself, Wole. In John Wall's return to D.C., the Washington Wizards, this time, defeated the Houston Rockets 131-119. Right, I mean, Will, what's your thoughts on the game?
Davis Bertans showed up. That, and along with Houston, I don't know. This is one. I'm not going to say I struggle with it, but I see the pieces that Houston has when healthy with, you know, Christian Wood. Boogie Cousins.
Can we talk about Boogie though? Boogie look done though. I'm gonna let you go. Boogie don't. That's a whole. I love Boogie, but that injury. I feel so bad for him, bro. That hurts. His injury hurts my soul.
It does. But I think luckily for him, if he starts to watch not old tapes, but if he watches tape of Zach Randolph. I think it'll do wonders for him for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
Because essentially that's what Boogie Cousins is going to have to turn into to be able to sustain his career is be like Zach Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just playing on the block, using his strength, using his lower body strength, and being a rugged back to the basket kind of traditional four or five.
No, I'm with
you. I mean, he still had offensive talent. He still is one of the more offensively talented big men in the league, you know. But he just lost all what little explosiveness he had in his game.
Exactly.
Biggest takeaway: Davis Bertans showed up. The team looked.
I said, finally, he showed up. Go ahead, bro, you good?
Yeah. The team, you know, when they were down, you know, they put together a good stretch of defense against Houston Rockets team. And one thing that for lack of a better word, they struggled with is. Early in the first half, John Wall kind of took liberties with driving, getting to the bucket, which is something that you don't want to see this team doing, you know, consistently letting those fast and shifty point guards get to the bucket and, you know, get into the paint at least and create opportunities for themselves around the basket or a driving kick three for their teammates. So, if you ask me to grade their performance, I would say a C plus.
C plus, okay.
C plus.
Ray, what were your thoughts on the game?
I want to give a shout out to my man Will because Will is the only person that I knew.
Yeah.
That was really high on the Christian Wood trade. I remember Will
Real talk.
You texted us and said, "Man, the Rockets got to upgrade with this dude Wood. That's gonna make a big difference."
He did.
And Wally was like.
Who? I was like, who?
That good?
I was serious. This was real talk.
And now we're seeing the Rockets struggle without him. Actually, we had a show, Will, one that you weren't on, and I told Wole, because Wole was asking, can Oladipo and Wall be the best tandem in the league? And I said, really, that team needs to be built around Wood. And Wally was like, because, you know, he's the guy that he needs everybody, and he benefits from the support of the team, whatever. And I'm not saying you were wrong and I was right. I'm just saying that. This stretch of basketball is showing that they need that brother on the court, bottom line. You know what I mean? No matter if he's the focal point or not.
They do.
So anyway, not having him was obviously the biggest issue for the Rockets last night, in my opinion. And they had a number of injuries. But I'm not going to sit here and apologize that the Wizards won because when the Wizards played the Rockets last time, they were fresh off COVID and had nobody as well. But my thoughts are that even though the Wizards won this game, their flaws are still – I just think ever so glaring. And Raul Neto is just too small, bro. John Wall was walking to the basket. I mean, not just John Wall. I feel like the Wizards, they struggle to protect the rim. And that's a problem because of their size and, of course, their defensive play. And that's the issue. So either Scott Brooks is going to have to go or they're going to have to make some personnel changes. I would even like to see Cassius Winston get some burn because even though he's not the tallest, he's thicker. And I feel as though he's tougher. This man eliminated Duke. When Duke had basically the top three players in the nation, led by Zion Williamson, so I'm thinking that something has to give. But The one thing I will say I like about Brooks in his show in this game is he's finding a tighter rotation. Yeah. Troy Brown is not playing no more, bro. He's not getting any burn. Because Mo Wagner is, and that's what I like about what Scott Brooks is doing. He's finding a tighter rotation. That's going to help you in this West Coast trip, and it helped you in that game last night.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at that game, and one, John Wall didn't play that good.
And Matthews, too.
Yeah, John Wall didn't play that good. And Houston, to me, is very – and to Ray's point and Will's point – Houston's very limited offensively, especially off the bench. They have no real offensive weapons. Defensively, they play decent defense, but they're just so limited. And I know they didn't have like Eric Gordon and company. They were kind of short. They were kind of short manned for yesterday's game. But at the same time, like they're not. If you watch them over some games without Wood, you could tell like this team needs all the weapons that they can have, and then losing Oladipo too doesn't make it easy. So that team is limited offensively. But then you look at the Wizards' standpoint in that game. I just think, to me, the last two games, looking at the Wizards playing defense, it's been much better than we've seen over the last some odd games. And Will and Ray, you know, I am very negative on Scott Brooks, but I like to give credit when credit is due. The adjustment of changing his rotation and his lineup over the last two games has really worked for him. You know what I mean? Worked for this team because they got guys who are gritty. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of like the shortcomings, people like to call out on Mo Wagner or Matthews. These are dudes that scrap. And they don't have enough dudes on the team that scrap on defense. They'll scrap to whoever. They may not be solid. Well, I think Matthews is solid defensively, but like Mo Wagner may not be solid defensively, but he's trying, and he's trying hard to play defense. And there are guys on that team that don't. Davis Bertans just wants to shoot threes all day. Like, he's not trying to strap nobody up. Troy Brown is still trying to figure out if he belongs in the league. He's still worried about playing ball rather than just playing ball. So they got guys now that in that rotation that are now – are just balling. They working hard. And I'm with you. I would like to see Cassius Winston play a little bit more, but it is what it is in terms of still, you know, Westbrook's burn. They like Neto. And what's his name? Neto? Neto? That's how you say his name? Neto?
Neto. Raw Neto. Yeah.
They like Neto because he can shoot a little. I mean, he can shoot. I'm not going to take that away from him.
Exactly. The problem.
Yeah. So he, again, but because, you know, Scott Brooks values offense, but I'm glad that he's valuing dudes who scrap because if to win basketball games, everybody can't score. You shouldn't be worried about everybody scoring, dropping buckets. You got to have dudes to play roles. You got to have dudes that are like the Robin Lopez's, who are like the Mo Wagner's, or like the I just mentioned his name, Matthews, or even Bonga, dudes who play a role who just scrap. You need to incorporate dudes like that for you to win basketball games. Shoot, the Oklahoma City Thunder, man, Robeson couldn't score worth a lick, but they put him on there because they knew he played defense and he scrapped. They needed that type of player on there on the floor to help him out, and he couldn't score to save his life, but he had a particular role to help them get to the NBA Finals or whatnot. So I just think that it's all about finding dudes that, you know, you got to play dudes who are willing to do whatever it takes, you know what I'm saying, regardless of scoring the basketball, do whatever it takes to help you win basketball games. And I think by incorporating these individuals on the floor, it makes it easier for them to do that. But to John Wall come back to D.C., is it really a comeback for John Wall to the city? There's no crowds in attendance? I'll start with you, Will T.
No. It's not. Look, the biggest thing that we have learned since March of last year is with regards to sports, as much as people want to say that the fans don't play any role in a game, they definitely play a role in the game. You definitely notice the energy of certain players when they're fans in the arena from that perspective. But on the court, no, they don't play any factor into determining the game. But they do give a spiritual advantage to certain players.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's not a comeback. Now, when he does come back next year, it'll be great to get the applause that he deserves.
Ray.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Will. Perfect segue for me, because now I'm about to go against everybody, including Chris Miller. My gosh, Chris Miller, I'm a fan, bro. I met you. You know, you cool. But, yo, John Wall plays for Houston now. My gosh.
Anyway,
to get to my point, no, because Chris Miller was advocating for a tribute. But I feel like, just look at what Will T said about the fans. The tribute should not have been played until we had fans back.
I agree.
In the
I think they
gonna
I agree,
play a tribute
bro.
During a timeout
bro,
with
agree.
No freaking fans.
Yeah.
Like, what was that?
Bro,
I had like,
somebody.
They shouldn't even have played it.
Hey, like, Ray, somebody on Twitter was like, the tribute could have been better. I'm like, who cares about a tribute could have been better? Nobody was there. Like, what are you sweating, bro?
Exactly. Yo. They going to play a tribute during the timeout with no fans.
Hey, yo, trash, bro.
Yeah, this is horrible. That's like the Capitals playing a Barry Trotz tribute video with no hockey fans. I mean, hockey is hard enough to watch the certain people, but then you're gonna have a tribute video where everybody's watching at home and not even in person. Like, it's just ridiculous. I feel like they botched that one. Like, Tommy Shepard has botched the entire John Wall situation, and maybe even Ted, because I hear Ted is the one that pretty much drove John Wall out of town after that blood video,
yeah.
That's what you want to call
it. That blood video,
but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel as though, honestly, you know, I'm a John Wall fan. I like Russ, too. You know, I'm going to keep putting that out there. But the tribute video could have waited, bro. I'm sorry.
I agree.
To a better time.
We're going, Will. You about to say?
Ray, you mentioned something that I did want to bring up for a discussion amongst us.
Go ahead.
Okay.
John Wall, prior to the game, he did an interview, I believe, mm-hmm. with The Athletic, and he stated that he believes that video of him at that party, you know, throwing up gang signs, I'm not going to say which gang it was related to, was the tipping point which made, you know, what he feels in his mind that mm-hmm. management decided that they were done with him. They excommunicated him. They were done with him at that point. So that's kind of contrary to what we had been hearing in the media or in the press, where it was, you know, there was beef between Bradley Beal and John Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the team decided to side with Bradley Beal opposed to John Wall. So I just wanted to know, what do you guys think in retrospect, you know, taking into consideration, you know, what John Wall meant to this organization, what he's meant to this community, his play on the court. Do you think that, you know, that, and I believe we covered this before, but do you think that video should have been a tipping point for him to be traded to Houston?
I could take this real quick because mm-hmm. being behind the scenes with the Wizards and covering the Wizards and the media, there were rumblings that the biggest issue with Troy Weaver not being hired here as the general manager is because of his ties to Curtis Malone and DCSO. Because Ted, to put it in, I guess, the cleanest version I can put it in for the show is, Ted does not want anything hood associated with his organization. And I definitely feel like that video was a tipping point just based on what I've heard about the way Ted conducts his business.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hearing that. I think be quite foolish if this is the truth, and it's starting to sound like it's the truth, because to what Will stated in terms of John Wall's accomplishments and on and off the floor for DC and the Washington Wizards, and what he's done to the community, what he's done for the community, and what he's done for the team, and for that to be the tipping point for him not to be a Washington Wizard, regardless of so many factors on why you can logically say that, you know, why John Wall wasn't going to be part of this new team. You could say, all right, you want to move towards the Bradley Beal, you know, era of the Washington Wizards, or you know, the injury. You know, those are basketball items. Those are things that help you in terms of basketball wise and on the floor that you can say, all right, we're going this direction. But if it's something as minor as the picture, especially when you play, when you own a hockey team with a dude that, and I love Ovi, that, you know, was arrested for reckless speeding and reckless driving and things of that sort. And we're not looking at him in a certain way, but we're looking at John Wall in a certain way because of pictures or whatnot. So it's interesting if that's the case. That's why I'm hoping that it's not the case. I just think that would be ridiculous in terms of if you're trying to run a basketball program.
Good point.
You know what I'm saying?
Real talk.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's my opinion about that whole situation. But on real quick before we go to break, on Facebook, about John Wall, George posted. What's up, George? He posted, no, he deserves to come back to a rousing ovation from the fans. That's
that he surely would have gotten. Yeah, definitely. John Wall would have got a lot of love from the fans. John Wall is a very popular player. Again, like Ray said, F that tribute. That's stupid. Have it when fans are around.
I know we're coming up on time, but
yeah.
I just didn't want to make one more point.
Sure,
you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you come back and you don't put anything up there, kind of, you know, as a remembrance of his time and his, you know, everything he's given to the community, his team, then you're looked on as a classless organization. But as we saw with, you know, even Saturday with KD going back to Golden State, you know, there were no fans there. They still played the tribute. KD, you know, didn't even pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Right? So it's one of those things. It's damned if you do,
right,
damned if you don't. And I think that they kind of erred on the side of let's be safe, give him some type of tribute. But we also know that when fans come in, we need to do a look. We need to do more.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
His contribution to the city and the organization.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping when he comes back after next season, when he comes back, like this was just a preliminary tribute. Let's just hope they do more for the next one, the real one. That's what I'm hoping for. But our DMV Baller segment is back. We'll air our interview with former Montrose Christian sharpshooter Tyler Hubbard after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Thing.
The agent.
You start calling him.
I know. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy. So we recorded this interview with Tyler Hubbard earlier. I want you to enjoy it.
The individual that I had the pleasure of introducing was born and raised in Washington, D.C., and later moved to Prince George's County, where in his younger days, he played his hoops with Kettering Largo Mitchellville. So, Wole, you already know he learned how to shoot free throws early because them reps are Kettering, bro. We already know what it was. But anyway, our guest will later take his basketball talents to Montrose Christian School, where he would play varsity in each of his 4 years and was elevated to team captain in his senior season. In 2011, he led all players in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area in three-pointers made while leading Montrose to finish number 2 in the Power 8 Fab 50 National Basketball Rankings, and capped off his senior season with an invite to play in the Capital Classic. Our guest basketball journey would land him close to home at Loyola University, Maryland, where in 2012 he helped his team earn a dance to the NCAA tournament. In his senior year at Loyola, he again earned the title of team captain and finished his career ranked 3rd in program history in three-pointers made. For me, he ranks as one of the top 3 shooters I've ever seen in high school basketball. And today he trains and develops athletes at Hoop Fit Elite, which he started after his stellar playing career. Welcome to the Urban Sports Scene, Mr. Tyler Hubbard.
What's going on? Thanks for having me.
All right, so this DMV Baller series, it began following the release of Kevin Durant's documentary, Basketball County. And we've asked all our guests, did they see the documentary? I'm asked the same of you. Did you see the documentary? What were your thoughts on it?
I did see the documentary. I thought it was well put together. The content was great. How they highlighted Go-Go as far as our area. I thought the documentary probably could have been put together in you know, series as far as, you know, episodes. But as far as the content goes, I mean, the content was excellent.
Absolutely. And we know that you played against a lot of big names in this area. What are some guys that you played with that you felt like or played against that maybe could have been mentioned in the documentary or who were mentioned in the documentary, such as Quinn Cook? And I'm assuming and I'm guessing just based on what I heard that there's going to be additional parts of this series coming out in years to come. What would you like to see added into the documentary moving forward?
The documentary could have added a few more players, of course, but it was only an hour slot, so they couldn't add everybody, in the documentary. But Ronnie Magruder, who he could have been added in the documentary. Tywan Lawson, could have been added in a documentary. Just a few other people, Kendall Marshall, who came out of O'Connell, another McDonald's All American. Just a few different names that could have been added, but like I said, it was only an hour, series. So if they do break it down into different episodes or series, I believe they're going to add, more content as far as, highlighting different players, different high school, teams around the area.
Now, I mentioned when I introduced you, you played with Ketterer Largo, and talk about that squad and who played on that team with you. Because it sounds like, just going back to even your younger playing days, that you played around a lot of talented guys that were going to motivate you and help you become a better player.
So I was, commuting from D.C. to PG, playing, run and shoot when that was called run and shoot. Just playing pickup. And my dad always had me around AAU at a young age. So I played for Kettering as well, for Boys and Girls Club. And on that team, we had Quinn Cook, Byron Island, Jeremy Grant, and Jerrion Grant. So, just to name a few people, at a young age, we were already, one of those tight-knit. As we got older, we always just stayed around, Granted, we went to different high schools and, played on different AAU programs, but we still always, had that bond and that relationship.
So you played for DC Assault, right? Didn't Quinn play for DC Assault too, or you played on a different team?
Yeah, so me and Quinn played on our DC Assault team. And in the 17 and under year, I played on the DC Assault Blue, and he was on the DC Assault Gold team.
Absolutely. So let's go right into your high school career. As I mentioned when I introduced you, I remember your Montrose team. Y'all had an amazing starting five. I'd be getting it wrong. But you had Tyrone Johnson, right? I guess that was your senior year Tyrone played with y'all?
Yeah, so Tyrone, he transferred in that senior year, and he was a crazy impact to our success that season.
So y'all had Carmelo Bencourt, which I believe he's still balling. Of course, maybe most notable for those who are listening to this show around the country, Justin Anderson played on that team. And y'all played a tough schedule that included Oak Hill, which was led by the aforementioned Quinn Cook at the time. Do people still talk about your Montrose team today, since it was one of the great teams back then? And can you name some of the most talented players? I know you mentioned some just now, and the Grant brothers, but who else might you mention that you played against or you played with that were super talented, including AAU?
Right. So I still stay in contact with Coach Duvetter. Talk, here and there, just to check up on him, just reminiscing on, the years that I was at Montrose and, the stories and just the special times we had at that school. As far as my senior year goes, we played a tough schedule. We played St. Benedict's, Oak Hill twice, Finley Prep, Arlington Country Day, and I believe we played who was the other team we played? Boys and Girls from New York.
Okay.
So we played a tough schedule. We ended up going, 25-1, I believe. We lost it to a team in New Jersey at the primetime shootout. But, that year was just a special year. Everybody bought in. I believe everybody on the team, maybe except for two kids, went Division I. I think everybody played college basketball. But that year was special because everybody bought in. As far as talent goes, who I played against, we played against some tough kids. I think the best player I've probably matched up against, just been on the same court with, was probably Brandon Jennings my freshman year. We played them in North Carolina, Oak Hill versus Montrose in 08, and that kid is just, he was just special. He was different. We knew from that from that day that he was going to be, a lottery pick. He was doing certain things that I haven't seen before on the basketball court.
So I'm glad you mentioned Coach. I'm gonna get to him in a minute, but I know we talked about Quinn Cook on a couple occasions. But didn't you guys sweep Oak Hill that year? Those two games, right?
Yes. So we played them at West Virginia at the primetime shootout, and then we played them again at Georgetown Prep in the ESPN High School Invitational. I believe both games went into double overtime.
That's crazy. I guess that was that cool for bragging rights, or y'all ain't really talk trash? Y'all was that tight.
We did, because I mean, I've been knowing Quinn since he was, you know, like 7. So mm-hmm. I mean, he's always been a winner at every level. I mean, AAU, you know, middle school, high school. I mean, college, he has a ring, and then in NBA, he has a ring. And, you know, we had a little bragging rights. I told him, I said, I stopped that high school national championship ring. You know, you got one at every level but high school, so.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm talking about. I feel you. So, with that being said, who would you have considered your biggest rival in high school, as a team or individually?
As a team, probably definitely Oak Hill. I mean, Oak Hill has that tradition. You know, they're always, you know, top 5 in the country, top 10 in the country. They're well coached by, you know, Steve Smith, who's been there for years. And that tradition is always, you know, from that game on 06 with KD and his mob when they beat Oak Hill at Coolidge. You know, that tradition just kept going on. You know, I think that was one of the best, you know, if not the best high school basketball game that's ever been played. You know, I mean, the talent that was mm-hmm. in that game, from, you know, Mike Beasley to Taiwan Lawson to Kevin Durant to Adrian Bowie to Gravis Vasquez, you know, to Isaiah Armwood, Terrell Vince. I mean, those kids, I mean, it was just something special to watch.
Man, you are providing perfect answers, bro, because I was just getting ready to say, during your high school career, you played for the legendary Stu Vetter, who you mentioned already. Of course, he coached some of the guys you just talked about, Kevin Durant, Gravis Vasquez. And Montrose just didn't lose many games while he was there during his 10-year. So expand a little bit about that experience playing for such a legendary high school coach, Stu Vetter.
Playing for Coach Vetter was definitely something special. I mean, it prepared me for college. The way he ran his program was, you know, like a college program. I mean, we had study hall. We had, you know, 6 a.m. workouts. We had weight sessions. We had film sessions. You know, we had to wear a suit and tie before games. You know, that stuff prepared me for the next level. So those type of practices at the next level, you know, I was ready for. You know, preparation before games. We had team meal together. I mean, we played a national schedule, so we traveled a lot. I mean, we went to Hawaii. You know, we went to, you know, West Virginia, the primetime shootout. We went to Florida for the that tournament out in Florida. I forgot what it's called. City of Palms out there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we played a national schedule every year. So, and then around the area, those teams expected us to be good. So it was always a target on our back. So when we played against these different teams and these rivals around the area, you know, we had a target on our back.
Yes, sir, definitely. I remember watching you guys on TV, you know, which was dope, because I said, man, it's a blessing for people around the country to get to see Montrose. Because outside of the DMV, you know, DeMatha is the name that comes to mind when everybody thinks about high school basketball. So it was cool to see you guys get that exposure and get that recognition. And my man Wole just jumped into the conversation. He's here now. Wole, this is Tyler. Tyler, Wole, your recruitment process like? Because, you know, when I reached out to you, you emphasized you wanted to share how challenging it was to make it to the D1 level. So talk about your recruitment process to Loyola. Were there any other schools in the mix? And what ultimately led to your decision to play at Loyola?
So playing at Loyola was, I wanted to go there from, you know, when I first entered at Montrose, my 8th grade year. Damian Jennifer was one of my trainers and coaches there, who currently coaches at Mount St. Joe in Baltimore. And he actually attended Loyola as well. Mm-hmm. And he was just a big, you know, big brother to me. He was a mentor to me while I was at Montrose. And he influenced me to just, you know, to go to Loyola. But as far as recruiting goes, I was recruited by a lot of schools. My recruitment actually, you know, expanded as my senior year progressed. I mean, I started getting, you know, different schools coming in the mix as far as, you know, later down the road. But my ultimate decision to pick Loyola was just I wanted my family to be able to see me in college. I wanted my family, my grandmother, my mom, my dad, my cousin, my brother to be able to come watch me at home games. And then also, too, with Loyola being in the same league as American and Navy, they were able to see 2 away games as well.
Nice.
All right. So, Tyler, this is Wole. So, did you get a lot of your homies come to your game, other than your family, did a lot of your homies come to the game?
Oh yes, I mean, I used to take a lot of my my tickets from a lot of my teammates because I had about, you know, 15 or 16 people coming to each home game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was definitely convenient. It was I don't regret the decision. I had a great mm-hmm. 5 years there because I did redshirt my freshman year. But like I tell these young kids now that I am training right now, I tell them just take advantage of the moment, you know, seize the moment because, you know, those 5 years go by quick.
Mm. So how much
take advantage of the opportunity.
So how much? So did you like the pressure playing in front of your folks and your homies, or did you like embrace that? Because I could, like, for a lot of folks, you know, they don't want to have a bad game or whatever.
TV or, you know, play in front of a 15,000, 20,000 crowd, because I was prepared, you know, coming from Montrose Christian, you know, we always played in front of a big crowd because everybody, you know, around the country wanted to see Montrose Christian. So I think that prepared me in itself just, you know, to be able to take on those type of, you know, moments.
So what was it like playing in the NCAA tournament?
I mean, that experience was, you know, is bar none. I mean, that you get to the hotel, you know, it's banners everywhere. You know, you get the police escort. It's just, you know, something special to just, you know, be a part of. You know, the lights are bright. I mean, when they say the lights are bright there. And it's an experience, you know. Coming from a mid-major, you know, it's harder to get to, you know, the NCAA tournament
mm-hmm.
versus these Power Six schools like a Duke, Kentucky.
Mm.
You know, you got to actually work twice as harder because you got to win not just, you know, your regular season tournament, but you have to win, you know, your conference tournament mm-hmm. as well.
Yep.
So
I want to ask you real quick. I'm deviating a little bit, but how do you feel about this season's NCAA tournament just based on all that's going on with the pandemic? Is it the same feeling for you right now, or you just feel like it's not the same because of just canceling with the canceled games and with teams just not looking as good in the Power Six that you just mentioned, too, or what you just mentioned, actually?
Right. I think with the pandemic, it definitely gave, you know, coaches and players, mm-hmm. you know, a different type of challenge as far as, you know, being prepared for games, having a quarantine, you know, if one mm-hmm. of the players or one of the staff members, you know, gets sick or, you know, gets, you know, around COVID. I think this year's tournament is going to be different. You know, mm-hmm. with everything going on in the world, it's just harder to prepare for games. You know, it's harder to prepare for games. It's hard to actually, you know, get a rhythm for games for players. Because, you know, you don't even know sometimes who you're playing against because last minute they might have to quarantine. You know, it's just whole, mm-hmm. the same situation with the whole KD thing. He was on the court and then they took him out. So it's just hard this year. You know, it's different circumstances. I am happy to see that the NCAA did grant everybody another year, which is fair.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
That was huge because I feel like this year was definitely a wash. I mean, I am happy to see the kids, you know, getting a chance to play and compete because, you know, that's huge. I mean, that's what these kids, you know, work all their life for, is to be able to, you know, play at the next level. And the rhythm they're not able to, you know, consistently get because of the pandemic.
That's true. That's true. So I actually had a question about, you said you talk about mid-majors and how you had to work, that mid-majors have to work harder just to get into the tournament, get into the dance. But also, wouldn't you say that for mid-majors, the tournament is where, for an individual, if he wants to make it to the next level and maybe not be getting the looks like other schools, like the tournament is essential to have, right?
Oh, for sure. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, playing in the NCAA tournament, that's the biggest stage. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get any bigger than that. So, I mean, if you're like, you know, like a UMBC, how they knocked off, you know, the number one seed UVA, that was huge. I mean, mm-hmm. now their notoriety is nationwide now. I mean, because they were able to accomplish something that's never happened before in college basketball. And I do tip my hat off to UMBC. Granted, I'm 3-0 against them. But,
I love it. I love it.
they haven't beat me yet. So, but they are well coached. They have a great program over there. They are Under Armour. Now, I would say, and maybe, you know, I'm wrong, maybe other people have different opinions, but I think the mid-major and high-major level, as far as, you know, these kids coming from, you know, high school to college, the only difference is just size. I mean, just don't have the size mm-hmm. of these high-major kids, you know. A two-guard at, you know, Loyola or Bucknell will probably be like 6'2",
mm-hmm.
versus a two-guard at Kentucky or Duke is probably 6'5", 6'6". Mm-hmm. You know, not saying that, you know, the skill level is, you know, a big gap. It's just that, you know, the height, you know, the size, mm-hmm. you know, that level of a high major, that size is a big difference.
Definitely. So as you as mentioned, you finished your college career as one of the best shooters in school history. Did you have opportunities to play at the pro level, and what aided your decision to start Hoop Fit Elite?
So I actually did sign a professional contract in Morocco, mm-hmm. and I went over there for about 7 days, and I just didn't like the experience. You know, I mean, I didn't like the experience as far as, you know, where my teammates weren't there yet. I was the only American on the organization. And I feel like my agent really wasn't, you know, he didn't put me in spots for me to be successful. So I ended up coming back and, you know, I found, you know, my highlights and, you know, just, you know, giving advice for these young kids on what it takes, you know, to play at the highest level, whatever level these kids could be at. But I want them to have the opportunity to play at the highest level.
Absolutely. So that obviously shed some light on why you started your own business. So how are things now currently, considering the restrictions and just what we're facing ongoing with the pandemic?
So right now, my sessions are limited to, you know, mm-hmm. No more than 10 for group, and I do individual as well. But all my kids have to wear, you know, we check temperatures. We constantly sanitize throughout the workout, and all my kids have to wear masks during the workout, which is pretty tough. Mm. But, you know, it just keeps, you know, my kids safe, and as well as, you know, keeps me safe as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank God that you're still able to work and continue to train and continue to develop these guys. I want to ask real quick, how do you keep these young guys motivated and encouraged? Because a lot of high school basketball around here has been shut down. I was reading online just some D.C. high school basketball players, how discouraged they are because they did not get a chance to play this season. How do you keep a kid encouraged and motivated to continue on pursuing their dream and trying to play the next level, seemingly so that the, you know, the opportunities have been limited lately?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as most of these kids the private school kids are actually, you know, they're able mm-hmm. to get a small season. You know, I mean, most of the games are going on at St. James and the district in yep. Virginia. So they've been playing some games out there. But for my public school kids, they haven't had, you know, that opportunity, which, you know, is unfortunate. But I just tell my kids, you know, just stay the course, you know, continue to yep. work on your craft. You know, it's always going to be, you know, roadblocks, you know, as your journey progresses, whether it's basketball or even in life in general. So this is your time, you know, just to reflect on, you know, what's important for you, you know, what means the most to you, and just keep working. I mean, we're not going to be in this pandemic forever, you know.
Right.
Life is definitely not going to be the same, but we're not going to be in this pandemic forever. So once things, nope. you know, get back to semi-normal, you want to be ready. You know, you don't want to be out of shape. You don't want to be rusty. You just want to keep working on your game, you know, keep getting in the gym, keep getting stronger, you know, and just keep maturing as a basketball player.
You have any young guys you want to shout out right now that may have a bright future that we may see or recognize in the future on a high school? I mean, I'm not saying on a college level or the NBA level or the pro level, I should say.
Yeah, definitely shout out my Hounds. You know, my Hounds, they're having a rough season right now. Just, you know, with everything with COVID going on, they can't really get, you know, a nice little groove going. But shout out my Loyola Hounds out there. Tavares Hardy's doing a good thing out there with them. And just shout out, you know, all my guys that's in the league, you know, and overseas, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of them, so I don't want to name all of them because I don't want to miss one. But it's a bunch okay. of guys over, you know, in the league or overseas, you know, getting it done. You know, that overseas life is definitely tough, especially when you're away from your family for months. You know, it's a lot of alone time out there. So definitely shout out those guys. Continue to keep them safe over there. You know, continue to keep them prayed up. And, you know, as this, you know, these days go by, hopefully we can get back to some type of normalcy.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I was talking about, though, like, any guys that are, like, in high school right now that you think are going to go on and do big things. that you're training or that you just know of? My bad.
No, for sure, for sure. I got Ryan Sable. He's a sophomore, actually, over at Gonzaga right now. Kid has a lot of potential. I think the ceiling is very high for him. Big guard, about 6'2", can shoot it. Probably, I think, one of the best shooters in his class. And the kid, let's say Zane, over at Bullis. He's a sophomore as well. Very crafty. I believe he plays AAU for New World, and Ryan plays AAU for Prospect U, 17 and under.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. So before we let you get out of here, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, including your thoughts on the Wizards? Because I've seen you on social media a little bit, and it looks like, you know, you have some opinions on what's going on right now in Washington when it comes to the NBA. Or just, right. You know, you want to share your social media handles and how folks can follow you and keep up with what you got going on.
Right. I think the Wizards, you know, right now, I mean, they got a free Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal's over there, you know, I mean, he's getting to it. You know, if he's not an all-star this year, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But I think they made a mistake for trading John Wall. You know, John Wall was, they thought, oh, you know, after the injury that he wasn't, you're not gonna be himself, but I mean, he's clearly doing what he's doing in Houston, and I think that was a big mistake just for the organization. I'm not really a fan of Russell Westbrook. I respect his game, but I'm not a fan of him. But you know, hopefully, you know, it's a long season. Hopefully, they can try to, you know, turn it around. You know, after All-Star break.
Awesome. So your social media, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, so I have two Instagrams. My training Instagram is Hoop Fit Skills Training, at Hoop Fit Skills Training. And then my personal is Tough Shot 23, T-U-F-F Shot 23. My Twitter is Tough Shot 23, T-U-F-F Shot 23.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. And, you know, hopefully we can do this again. Maybe we can talk to the NBA. You know, we are fans on this show, Russell Westbrook. We love John Wall as well. And like you said, hopefully they can turn it around. I don't know if they're going to trade Brad or not. It'll be interesting to see. But you know he's going to be all-star. We already see he's in vote. So it's coming. It's coming this year, bro. But like I said, thanks again for coming on, brother. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, man, that was a great interview. Tyler, man, Tyler Hubbard, man, appreciate him for being on. Again, man, he's a DMV sharpshooter, so check him out. You know what I'm saying? Just follow him on Twitter. Follow him on IG. I want to thank you all for listening and tuning into the interview. Tuning into the show. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes. Tune in, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And make sure you check out Sports Journey at sportsjourney.com for all of your DMV sports content. Again, thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. Yeah, dig. Deuces. Hey, Mega, you know what to do, bruh. It is out, big homie. Swag.